I get you for sure on that. Luckily I got enough room. I made me a little ham shack. We got a large, laundry room, but it's got cabinets and stuff everywhere. And I pretty much made me a little ham shack in there. And two-story house. I kind of ran the wire all the way through the attic and up through a gable vent to where that antenna goes out. So all my wires basically inside, except for 34 feet that's going up the pole and gets above the roof time.
Well, the thing is, you can upgrade feed line anytime you want. And if you get your general, having a nice long chunk of RG213 laying around is definitely ideal, because that cable is good for legal limit on HF, no problem.
Cool, and I hear a lot of people doing dipoles and stuff, and I've been looking around and trying to do some research on that and all, and see where I can put a dipole up for HF.
The ham radio on HF, and I can speak to this directly because I'm on a third of an acre in the city. I'm in West Asheville, so I'm urban. Okay, and I can't put up a giant tower here. That's out of the question. I've got a detached two-car garage. I've got a chicken coop. I've got another dollhouse on the end of the property in addition to the main house. And I've got a bunch of trees in inconvenient places. So I was limited in how big a piece of wire I could put up. So I chose put up the highest, biggest piece I could put up that would stay up in the air, you know. And so I ended up with a 90-foot piece of wire, and then the challenge was to feed it. So I have radials underneath it and stuff as a counterpoise and everything, and I have a tuner right at the feed point, so I can't use an amplifier. My tuner can only handle 120 watts, and it works really well. I'm very, very happy with it. But the thing is, depending on your property size and trees and other stuff, the solution is different for every person. Do not listen to somebody who says, well, this is the antenna you have to use. It's the best thing you could use, and, you know, blah, blah, blah. No, it's different depending on where you're at. Dipoles are very good, but, you know, there are other solutions that might work much better for you depending on what you want to do. Over.
What I was looking at, I've been looking all over the web and everything else, and I got a pretty big piece of property, but I do have a lot of oak trees around me, some tall trees, 90 plus trees around me and all, and I don't have a tower or nothing, but I could pretty much do about anything, it looks like, at my property. I just not sure which route to go when I do get into HF, and I'm definitely up for options and everything else.
Things about being a ham is having access to a whole bunch of different bands, you know, and I like the fact that I can, when I hook my HF rig up, I can work anywhere from, you know, 80 meters all the way up to 6 meters. All I have to do is hit one button on the rig to change the band, and then I hit the tune button, and then whammo, I'm there. And that is wonderful to me. And the great thing is because I have the tuner out at the feed point of the antenna, it's also very efficient. So it works really well. Of course, there's a lot of work in installing it because I had to install a bunch of radials. I have a bunch of ground rods for lightning protection, too, all connected with very big wire and everything. And this is a project that it took years to build out all that stuff, but it works really well. Now, if you have a lot of property, you could put up more than one antenna, and you could have more than one feed line coming to an antenna switch in the shack. Literally, the sky's the limit. You could have dedicated antennas for certain bands, for example. Like, you might want to have a dipole for 75 meters. That's great. You know, you could have just, and use it just for that. And then you can put up a separate antenna for 40. You know, it's just, it's up to your imagination and what you've got available to work with on the property. Vertical antennas work good, too. It's not a good choice here in the city because vertical antennas tend to pick up more noise. You might be able to put up, for example, a big horizontal loop and feed that with a tuner at the feed point. Those work really well, too. You know, it just depends on, you know, how your property's laid out, and what you want to do on HF. If you want to work DX and stuff, you might want to put up a tower and put like a tri-band beam on it for like, you know, 10, 15, and 20 meters and go nuts with that. I'll tell you, I have a friend that has a 20-meter beam antenna, and it's an amazing thing to, you know, swing the antenna into position and then talk to people at will. It's very cool, and it's something I can't do with my piece of wire for sure.
So, on multiple antennas, I guess you have you just bring all the cables in and you have it into a switch, or do you have to undo each coax and swap out when you want to change frequencies and stuff or channels?
Which is, you know, some of them I've seen ones that had six, you could run, you know, six antennas into them, and then there was one output for the rig.
Do you switch them out, or is it they have an automatic where, like, when I change the channel on my rig, it automatically picks the right antenna, or how does that work?
Way, but automatic switching stuff costs money, and by the way, the coaxial switches, just to manually switch, good ones cost money too, but auto switching costs a lot more.
Hobby, everything costs a lot of money for sure.
Well, you know, when I put up my wire initially, I was Captain Poverty. My antenna is made out of copper weld, but it's harvested from the main transmission line for the cable TV system here in Asheville. The truck backed into a span, and they replaced it between two poles. And so they piled it up on the side of the road, and my friend told me where this pile was, and so I drove up with my car, and I stuffed it in the car, and I brought it home, and then I took off the outer conductor. It had a steel messenger cable, which I cut off of it with a razor blade. Then I cut the whole jacket, removed the shield, and then removed all of the foam dielectric, which had all the sticky crap in it too. It was a waterproof coax. Nasty work, cut myself, bled a lot, but that's how I got the piece of copper weld that I'm still using to this day. It's been up now for, I think it's been in the air for over 15 years now.
Ooh, that's definitely neat. So you just got it straight up in the air? Am I copying that right?
Straight in the air. It's attached to a tree about 10 feet off the ground close to the house, and then it slopes up about 40 feet to the far tree. Over.
Copy. So you just put the coax, you basically make a fitting to go on one end of it, and then you just use the copper line as far as the antenna then.
Apart and just use the center conductor for the steel copper weld, because it's steel wire, but it's copper plated, heavily copper plated, and that's what I use as my antenna wire. You can buy it commercially. It's called copper weld. It's actually not that expensive, but when I did it, you know, I didn't have any money, so basically I got my antenna wire for free.
I guess there's different, you got to do different lengths for different things, or is it a certain amount of length of wire you got to use like that?
Good question. You know, I have a tuner right, and that way there's no feed line losses incurred by highest WR on different bands when you're trying to tune it from inside the shack. And the thing is, you don't want to have an exact electrical half wave, because the tuner can't deal with that high of a end impedance. My tuner can tune up to an impedance of about 5,000 ohms, and that's about what you'd expect for a half wave or so. So it's right at the limit of what the tuner can do, and they say don't do it. And 90 feet is one of the magical sort of, it's close to a magic length where it's not a half wave on any of the HF bands. So you can feed it directly with a tuner at the feed point, and it won't have any trouble. And it'll give you coverage, depending on the tuner, from 160 all the way to 6, or in my case, it tunes from 80 all the way to 6 meters. I do use it on 160, but to do that, I have to go outside and put a small coil in series with the output of the tuner. That makes the wire, of course, look longer, and then it tunes it up no problem on 160 meters as well.
pretty cool. It's a lot to learn, for sure. Like I said, I just got into it, and I mean, it's a lot of information, for sure.
It's really cool for, you know, if you assemble them correctly and are careful, you can get, you know, really good multi-band coverage with a nice fan dipole. Get it up high in the air, it'll work real well. And on some bands, you might have to use the tuner in the radio because the finals aren't happy, but the efficiency is still very high because as long as the SWR is below, like, you know, 2 or 3 to 1, somewhere in that range, the tuner in the rig can bring it right down to nothing, and the rig is happy, and it's also reasonably efficient as well. The big trick in most cases is getting it high in the air enough. That's the hard part.
I definitely can get it high up in the air. Like I said, I got a bunch of big trees and all kind of things that I can get it up in the air. Just figure out how I need to set it up for inverted V or whatnot and all that. That's a different ballgame for me.
Full antennas, but, you know, depending on if you have kids and stuff, a high voltage part of the antenna is the part that's close to ground, so that may not be too cool. Depending on where depends. Inverted Vs are great. Dipoles are good too. But adding more elements to them to increase the number of bands you can work while using one feed line is a fairly inexpensive way to get on the air and radiate a signal kind of efficiently. The other thing too is if you can get a remote tuner, you can put up an L antenna or a sloping wire like I have. Get all band performance with good efficiency, but remember, you have to have a good RF ground at the feed point, so that means you're going to have to install a radial field to do that. That also works really well. That's, you know, the system I'm using, and I love it. But dipoles work really well. The problem is getting it high enough in the air. You really want them about a half wavelength high, and if you think about that, at 80 meters, half wavelength is 40 meters. So, you know, 40 meters high, that's pretty tough for most people to do.
Makes sense, for sure. I was just now thinking I could probably do me a sloping wire. I got several options, all kind of things. I'm definitely going to do some more research on it.
Like loops, big loop antennas work really well, and they're quiet. They're fairly quiet, too. If you have some trees that are the right distance apart, you can make a gigantic vertical loop, and it'll work really well. It's just the magnetic version of a dipole, and they work nicely. You can also build a giant, you know, perimeter loop if you have enough trees, and, you know, the closest to a circle it is, the better, but it can be square or even triangular or what have you, and it'll load up pretty well, and it'll get out, too. I've talked to guys on loop antennas surprisingly far away, so I know they work pretty well.
I talked to a guy the other day that said something about that. He had a wooden fence around his property. I think it was an 8-foot fence, and he pretty much made the whole top of his fence line a big loop and made an antenna that way, which I thought that was pretty cool.
Cloud burner. Most of the power would go straight up, and the ground losses would be pretty bad too. But yeah, that would work. Again, you know, experiment and try stuff, because there's nothing quite like, you know, designing your own antenna and putting it up and everything, and then working Australia the first time you use it or something, and then you can tell everybody, yes, the antenna I designed, I talked to Australia first try. I'll tell you what, it's a lot of fun. It's kind of an amateur tradition too. In my experience, if you don't bleed when you're putting the antenna up, it probably won't work properly. And fortunately, I've hurt myself every time I've done it, so all my antennas work great. Over.
Tradition, for sure.
Big thing, too. I mean, I always seem to bust a knuckle when I'm working on a car, just because I never wear mechanic gloves. I swear, I never learn. Could you stand by for just a minute? I have to run to the bathroom real quick.
NNR, standing by. Good time.
4NA, NNR, and KI 4. WCA. This is KO4 GAR.
And I'm back. Hello, GAR.
But I'm going to have to probably sign with y'all. It's almost 2:30 in the morning. I didn't expect to stay up this long. I was going to go turkey hunting in the morning down in Jonesville, South Carolina, but I don't think I'm going to make it. I worked all day, been up since probably about 5 o'clock this, well, actually 4:30 this morning, and about 24 hours for me now.
A little bit longer, you'll be able to make it down there.
A little bit longer to make it down there and go to sleep.
73 and get a good night's rest. From your friend Michael in West Asheville, KI4WCA.
Time too. This is Jerry, KO4NNR. Definitely be back on the air with you sometime soon.
Absolutely. Jerry, yeah, if you get that TH-7800, man, I don't think you'll be disappointed. It's done well for me so far. I'm running LMR 400 out of it, and I get a good reception and transmit. So, like I said, you know, I got $229. That's with taxes and shipping and everything, and I don't think you'll be displeased with it, put it that way. But I wish y'all fellas all the best, and I got to sign out of here. So y'all have a good night, and I'll talk to you soon. KO4 GAR 73, fellas.
Exciting when you get your new rig in.
Like I said, I built that little base station, and I can't wait to get that radio in there to play with it for sure. And all I take this radio here in and out of my car. As soon as I leave work, I put it in my personal car, and I got a little L bracket antenna mounted in it. And but here I'm having to put it in the house. Definitely need to buy a couple more rigs. That way I can just leave them where they at.
It really operated mobile. On a full-time basis on 2 meters. I only ever use it on field day or special occasions when I'm going to go up to the top of a mountain or something. My magnet mount antennas just sit on a shelf here in the shack almost all of the time. I've got three mobile radios. I've got this radio, the 2730A. I have the first radio I ever got, which is the 2200H. And I love that radio, but the microphone on it's getting a little bit wonky. I've had to go into the switch on it twice. I really need to replace the switch. It's a teeny tiny little surface mount style sort of a switch, which is I just got to buy one and install a new one, and then that microphone will be perfectly fine again. But it's a known failure point for those Icon mics. And I've got the 2300H, which is the radio I actually use when I go in the car. Its big advantage is the speaker is actually in the top of it, and it gets really loud. It's got lots and lots of audio, so that's a pretty decent mobile, and that's normally what I chuck in the car. So I just don't leave radios in them because, you know, I live here in Asheville, and it gets really hot, and it gets really cold, and not to mention, I'm afraid some retard will break the window to steal it, you know?
And that, you know, there's a lot of them guys out there for sure. And that's one bad thing about it. But most of all my cars are tinted out where you can't really see into them a whole lot. And but as far as the heat and the cold is definitely a big factor for me, too.
You can throw in the car for HF. The one I use for that is I have a ICOM 7200, which I bought purely for field day / mobile use. And I have a Wilson 5000 antenna, which I had to cut, I don't know, almost 6 inches off the whip to get the thing to be resonant right in the middle of the technician portion of the 10 meter band. Amateur band, and that antenna is tuned perfectly. And so if I want to use 11 meters, or not 11, 10, I'm sorry, I keep misspeaking, I can throw that thing in the car and operate that. And I've tested it from the car like once, but the band was dead and nobody answered, so I'm looking forward to when the band opens up. I'm going to drive it up on the parkway, and that should be very entertaining from the 6,000-foot level for sure.
I was looking at that because I used to do a lot of CB stuff, so I have one of those antennas for sure at the house. I got several CB antennas, and if I'm thinking right, I mean, the Technova, I could do 10 meters, but I'm not clear. Is there 10 meter repeaters out there? Because I think that gets into more of the general stuff. Is that correct?
General or above to use the repeaters, but no, I set it up for the center of the single sideband portion of the tech allocation, so it's resonant right at 28.4. Because I think techs have privileges from 28.3 to 28.5 single sideband. I don't know if there's a power restriction on them or not, but I put it there because that's where most of the activity is, because, you know, 10 meters is kind of a vast wasteland of people not using it, which I find horrifying. Anyhow, I like 10 meters a lot. It's one of my favorite bands, and I haven't been able to use it until I put the tuner at the feed point in November of this past year, so I've been having some fun with that for sure. Anyhow, yeah, the antenna is resonant right for the center of that, and I actually bought another whip for it in case I wanted to throw a CB in the car and go on a road trip or something. I have a CB antenna as well. I have a good antenna analyzer, so tuning it's not a problem. Over.
I got CBs in my truck and all that stuff, and I used to love with the talking with it, but like I say, a lot of people just don't use it anymore, and I've never played with 10 meters at all, and more read into it. I thought about putting me a 10 meter at my house just to play around, see how many people's out there to talk on it.
There's not very many. Up here in Nashville, I finally found a group that's on, and I wandered into them one night, and I was like, oh, I can't believe it. There's activity, you know. And it's like, you know, four or five guys at the most. But we have a good time when I get on there. It's hit or miss, but most nights they're on after about 9 o'clock or so. And it's kind of fun. The distances aren't huge or anything, and all of us are running 100 watts as well. So it's one of those things, you know, it depends where you are. There are places in the country where there's a lot more local activity, but up here in the mountains, there's not that much.
I could try it out. Like I say, I like to dabble in a little of everything. You know, never know. Until I got into this, I knew radio waves were out there, but you really don't realize there's that much traffic going around you all the time. You just don't even know it.
When I got the, I've got a little spectrum analyzer a friend gave me. It's a little tiny thing, like the size of a pack of cigarettes, and I was fooling around with that thing. It's amazing the amount of stuff that's in the air. It really is.
Just basically turn it on and it tells you what kind of frequencies and stuff around you. Is that what that is?
So it covers from, I can't remember what the lower limit of the thing is, but I think it's maybe 50 megahertz. I think it might go a little bit below 50, but it goes between 50 and 950-ish megahertz or so. And it cost nothing. It was like really dirt cheap. My friend ordered two of them, gave one to me, and I went nuts with it. And that's what inspired me to buy the SDR dongle, because the SDR dongle also has the big, you know, spectrum display and waterfall and stuff. But it's really cool. It's great for finding interference, or you can go up to like a wall wart with it in wideband mode and see if it's putting out a whole bunch of spurs. It's really cool. But I also discovered that I could see all sorts of digital signals that I had no idea were there. You'd never find them with a normal radio turning the knob normally, because you'd only hear maybe an occasional bloop or something. But you can see it on the waterfall of that rig that there's all sorts of digital signals in the UHF and VHF ranges that you wouldn't even know that they're there unless you had a spectrum analyzer to see them.
be pretty cool to play with. Like you say, you have no clue how much stuff's out there, and that's, you know, that's, I think that's what kind of got me interested in this, is, you know, being able to talk to different people and finding different things, and there's a lot more things out there that I had no clue that even existed.
If you're fortunate, because we're at a time where the technology's gotten very inexpensive. Like the SDR dongle I bought, like I said, it's a quote-unquote premium dongle, okay? It's like one of the very best ones you can get. And it's $35. And it covers from 25 megahertz to 1.75 gigahertz continuously. No gaps. You can listen to anything you want. And it demodulates it beautifully. It's kind of cool looking at the FM broadcast band with it, because you can see the digital content that some stations also are transmitting as big bars on either side of the main FM signal. That's the darndest thing you've ever seen. And the other thing that's cool about the SDR is that you can get software for it, which I've only had it for a few days, okay? So I'm going to be getting more software for sure, but you can use it to decode digital modes. You can use it to decode the information that the FM stations transmit, as well as receive their digital content. So it's comical what you can do for $5. This is assuming, of course, you have a computer. I put it this way, as I was playing with it today, I'm like, this is a heck of a way to boil water. You know, it's kind of like the quote of Einstein talking about using fission to make steam to turn turbines. The SDR dongle is really inexpensive, but it uses a big PC to run. And, you know, a cheap FM radio might only have like 7 or 8 transistors in it, over.
And you call it, it's an SDR dongle, is that what you said?
USB stick, and one side of it is USB. You plug it into a USB slot on your PC, and the other end of it has a SMA connector on it for RF. Over.
Do some research on that. That'd be something cool to play around and see what's around me, for sure.
Receiver in the world, you know, believe me, I'm really into receivers, and I have some really good ones, but as far as, like, democracy in action in terms of, like, do you want, like, a multi-mode thing for 2 meters? Yeah, it's $35, here you go. But, you know, you have to know your way around a computer a little bit. Most people can do it, I think, without any trouble. I have a friend who has a pretty decent rig that he never uses because he just doesn't want to fool with the computer side of it, which, you know, I don't have any problem doing that.
I mean, I'm okay with computers. I can get around pretty good with it. I'm not no engineer with it by no means.
I'm okay with computers. I've got, you know, some certifications for networking and stuff, which I consider really pretty much meaningless. But, yeah, the thing is, they've been out long enough now, you can buy software, put it in, and then just go totally nuts. And you can get as deep as you want to into decoding. You can use them for all sorts of stuff. They're particularly good for, like, listening to emergency services, like fire frequencies and stuff like that. Signals that tend to be fairly strong, because from what I've seen, the dongle's not, like, the best thing in the world for trying to drag a real weak signal out, because there's no bandpass filtering at all. So it's very susceptible to images. If you turn the gain way up, you get all sorts of garbage and stuff appearing in the bandpass. But if you want to see what's going on in your area, there's nothing quite like it, and it's really, really cheap compared to what it would have cost to do that, say, 20 years ago.
Cool. So I'm looking at one now, analyzer. It looks like, I guess you do plug it into your computer, and it's got little antennas off of it, and it's got like a waterfall effect on it. Is that kind of what you're talking about?
Spectrum analyzer or the SDR dongle.
Roger, analyzer in.
Analyzer is standalone, but actually it's really lame. The dongle has way better. This is what you should Google search if you're your PC. It's RTL-SDR. Put that in your search criteria, hit return, and then see what you got.
RTL-FDR?
RTL-SDR. Perfect for it, and it surprised the heck out of me. I'm using my 2-meter, you know, I'm using my GP3 up on the roof as the antenna for it. It's the best sounding AM receiver I've ever used for listening to aircraft. It just sounds fantastic.
That's pretty cool. You can get them off Amazon for like $36.95.
The new electric ones are quote-unquote premium. I highly recommend it. It works great. And if you go to their website, you can get it, I think, for a buck less than Amazon or even a couple bucks less. Shipping is slower, but on their website, they have, like, Quick Start in SDR, and they show you, they have software and stuff to download, and you follow the instructions, and Bob's your uncle, your, you know, Mr. Kilocycle Inhaler, inhaling all RF information.
I'd definitely have to check this out. Like I said, it's very inexpensive, and some way to play around and see what's around you.
It's totally awesome. You have to understand it doesn't cover shortwave and stuff, so it's not good for listening to HF. You have to buy up converters for that. That costs a lot of money. Or there are dongles that do cover HF, but their performance is so lame, I wouldn't bother. The new electric is really nice. It works fantastic. I can't say enough good about it. And it costs, well, it costs nothing. I mean, who cares if it explodes, right? Out on the air, I was using the cheapest one, well, not the cheapest one, it's like the $35 one, and I was listening to 2-meter repeaters on it with my antenna, of course, up here in the mountains, and it was interesting because unlike using this radio where I can put it into scan, okay, the cool thing about a spectrum display, I could compress it to where it displayed the entire band, I could see all activity on the band and then immediately move the cursor over to it, click on it, and then hear it. And I got to tell you, that was kind of addicting.
I never leave my radio room if I get into all this stuff.
It costs very little. Now, I do have a 4K display, and I have a fairly decent, you know, now I guess it's a fairly average tower, but still, you need a decent amount of computing power. And it's funny, when I use that rig, the cooling fans start running faster in the PC, so it definitely makes the PC work.
Yeah, for sure.
Interested in spectrum scopes for HF at all. I don't care about that at all, but for signal intelligence work, you know, for seeing what is going on and VHF and UHF, the SDR dongle is, super highly recommended.
Several people say, getting the HF rig, some people say that you need to get one that don't have a waterfall and learn it the harder way, and then some people say, nah, get the ICOM 7300 or whatnot that has a waterfall on it, and I've heard several different ways, you know, which way to learn it best.
I'm 59, and I've been listening to radios for more than 50 years, and so I started before anything like that was generally available. I saw spectrum displays as a young man, but they were highly specialized equipment on military-level stuff, and then over the years it got cheaper, and ham radio has had spectrum scopes available for a long time, but nothing like this thing. I'll tell you what. There's nothing wrong with radios that have spectrum scopes built in, but my main criteria when I'm looking at an HF rig is the receiver specifications. I want a receiver that's really good. board, you know, and so the radio I have doesn't have a spectrum scope. That doesn't mean that I think they suck. I think they're hilarious, but I don't use one for HF. I'm not interested in trying to find a signal in the waterfall, because stuff that's really weak is going to be so far down in the noise, it's not going to show up in the waterfall that well anyway. And I find lots of stuff that's right at the threshold and work them. And then other people find them only because they heard my signal transmitting and they saw my signal on the waterfall and they tuned to that. So that's been my experience. My HF rig is a 7410, which is a really nice rig that they no longer build.
NR Friday. Yeah, that's pretty cool. I definitely interested in all of it. I like to learn it the harder way, and then that way later on I like to see the waterfalls too, which I've never played with a HF rig yet. I got a guy that I've been talking to a good bit in 6 Mile that he's offered me to come up there and play with his and all, just to see how I like it and all. I haven't had a chance to get up there and talk to him and sit down with him and play with it yet.
And HF radio is nothing like talking on FM. A big part of the challenge is trying to, like, pull the guy's voice out of the noise. You know, it's not that easy. But it depends. You might be into digital modes like FT8 or something, in which case that's not even relevant. But HF is not like working FM at all. You have to learn how to tune the signals, you know, properly and to listen. It takes experience, but it's really, really cool. And there's nothing quite like talking to places like, you know, Perth, Australia, or New Zealand, or South Africa, and knowing that you did it with your 100 watts and a piece of wire. Over.
I mean, that's amazing. You know, that's pretty amazing that you can take 100 watts of power and a piece of wire up in the air and kind of bounce it all over the world. That's fantastic for sure.
HF is that it's fairly expensive, as you've noticed. I mean, a 7300 costs, you know, $1,000 or a bit more than $1,000. That's a lot of money. I mean, my God, my first HF rig was an ICOM 718. I bought it for $400 used. Honestly, I got ripped off on it. It was really only worth like maybe $300, $350 because it was cosmetically in fairly poor condition. It was dirty. It had been used mobile. It had been rode hard and put up wet, as it were. So, but, you know, the thing is, I enjoyed that radio, and I worked all sorts of DX with it. I worked South Africa with it on 75 meters, you know, which is, like, totally epic. I worked Ducey Island Expedition in the South Pacific with it, and it was the first radio I used to work transatlantic DX, so I enjoyed it tremendously. I also worked Perth, Australia long path on 20 meters with it, which is really cool, which means working Perth, Australia by going up over the North Pole and then back down to Australia, so a path length of over 10,000 miles, totally epic. That was really, really cool, but that radio doesn't have really effective noise reduction. The receiver's kind of noisy. It has DSP, but only audio DSP, so it couldn't deal with, like, the crap level that was rising here in West Asheville. I bought the 7410 because it had really killer DSP. I'd read about it, and that radio is so good, I'm never going to use anything else. So that's the story on my HF experience so far. Over.
Definitely a lot to get into, and I've been looking at all kinds of different things, you know, and I'm not sure, once I get my general, I'm not sure what kind of rig or how I really want to do it yet. You know, it's a lot of good ideas and a lot of good contacts out there for sure, but yeah, I got a lot of looking into, because like I say, once you get into it, you can spend a lot of money on different rigs and do different things.
For you. I mean, people will tell you, oh, you can use a QRP rig and it's fine. No, don't do that. Just trust me on this. Get a 100-watt radio. use that as like your base criteria. Does the radio put out 100 watts? If so, then it's possible. You know, if it's like a 25 watt radio or a 5 watt radio, do not buy it to start on HF. Can I use a radio like that? Yes, I can. But I also understand that a lot of the time it's going to be extremely difficult to make a contact and it might become tedious. So that's my advice. Buy something with 100 watts. If you have to save up to do it, then save up for sure. And also, don't neglect the fact that some of the gear that's no longer built, that's now available at, you know, fairly low prices, that can be a much bigger bargain than something that's new that's on sale. Because you can get, like, yesterday's top-line radio for less than today's entry-level radio, which is always a good idea if it's been taken care of.
Good information. That's a... Yeah, that's my theory. I definitely would want 100 watts at least. I don't think starting out I'd want anything less by no means. But, yeah, I didn't think about looking at the used stuff that, like I said, it could be the top of the line stuff yesterday. That's definitely good information to keep in mind.
Like mine, the 7410 with everything in them, all the filters. Because they had optional filters, they were $100 each, so add $200 to the price of the rig to put the filters in it. I've seen those for sale for $850, which I would buy one of those all day, every day, over a brand new 7300. A lot of people say, well, it doesn't have a band scope. Well, my reply to that is, who cares? It's got a fantastic receiver, it's got great digital noise reduction, and the transmitter is absolutely bulletproof. You can transmit all day long, and the fan will maybe run on high if the room is warm. They're really nice rigs, and they're fairly inexpensive. And the older the radio gets, the more that applies. But you have to do stuff in terms of research. There are some radios you do not want to buy used because they no longer make parts for them. Not a problem with the 7410, but for some stuff, it's a huge problem. Like something simple like the rotary encoder fails on some radios, you can't buy it, and the rig's junk.
About doing research, that's one thing for sure. I definitely don't like buying things that's discontinued and, you know, all the way out and all, because, you know, it's not if something's going to go back wrong, it's, you know, anything I have will go wrong. If I can't buy things to fix it, then it ain't used for me to go ahead and buy it, for sure.
The ICOM 718 is actually a pretty decent rig if you could find one that's an older one. The Japanese microphone is much better than the Chinese one they put on later, for example. Mine is so old it has a Japanese microphone, and I always used a hand mic. When I got the 7410, I was going nuts, so I bought the desk mic for it, the SM20, and that's a, you know, one of these things where you press down the talk bar and talk into it, and I've got great audio reports from that. It's just, I can't tell you enough what a giant deluxe experience having that rig is, but, you know, your mileage may vary. Rigs like the 7200, you know, the 7200's not a perfect radio by any stretch. It's pretty good, but the stock microphone is actually craptacular. It's really horrible, and when you put a SM20 on that thing, it just wakes up and it sounds fabulous. So there you go. I've never used the stock hand mic for the 7200. It's still in its original packaging. Over.
You know, you think the mic can all be fantastic with it, but I've heard several people tell me that over the radio already that, you know, some radios have great stuff, and I've heard just about anything you get from Japan is really well, but, of course, you can buy the same thing from China, and it can be really crappy.
All of my radios are made in Japan, I'm an ICOM fanboy. I don't apologize for it. I have a Yaesu here in the shack as well, a 990. Which is a really nice radio. Those are available fairly inexpensively, but they're very old at this point. And it costs a lot of money to maintain them as well if you have to pay somebody to work on it.
Well, Icons, I think I like the Icons better than the Yaesu's and the Yaesu's and whatnot. I've heard a lot of people in there have different ones, but it seems like a lot of people like the Icons better, in my opinion.
Icon gear is as cool as it was in the past. I really like Icon stuff that's slightly older than what there is now. Like, I don't really like the direct SDR that they're using in the 7300 or the 97 for that matter. I mean, it's like, it's okay. You know, it could be better. They're very cool. If you love the display part of it, if you're into the functionality that that brings, then they bring a ton to the table. That's never really interested me for weak signal use and stuff. It doesn't add anything to receiver performance. So I'm not on that train for sure. So understand I'm biased in that way. I really am. Now, you have to understand, I like displays, obviously. I'm really into the SDR. It's hilarious, but the SDR is not a very great receiver either. My experience with ICOM has been they made really, really good receivers for a long time, and I thought they were better than anything else. I think right now the champion of receivers is actually Yaesu. I hate to say that. The FT-10 is probably the most nuclear rig you can buy for the price. Don't have any idea how reliable it is. It's a little radio, but it works really well. And the FT-101, which of course is, you know, a kilodollar rig, is nuclear as well. But either one of those would be my choice if I was starting new and had infinite money. That's where I would go.
I've been entering the wind that the FT-DX-101D Gigapart's trying to give away right now. I've been doing that for a while, but hopefully I win it. But, you know, that's a shot in the long dart, but they're going to give it away here pretty soon.
Mention that, I'll have to enter that contest myself because that radio is fantastic. I have a friend that has an FT-DX 5000, and I've tuned that radio, and it really is amazing. It's really nice. But the new radio isn't enough better to make it worth it for him to upgrade. I wouldn't do it for sure. And one of the things you run into is once you get up to a certain level in HF performance, it really is a matter of personal taste on do you like operating the radio? Do you like the way the controls feel? Do you like the way it looks? It becomes subjective. It really does. I mean, you could always point, well, yeah, this radio technically is like 2 dB better. Like, anyone could tell 2 dB. They can't. So, that's a thing as well. But I'm happy with the gear I have. Actually, if I had infinite money, I'd love to have a 7851 ICOM. That would be great, although I never really wanted a dual receiver HF rig. And that's what that is. It has two radios built in for receive, and it's really for contesting and stuff. The 7700, which is now discontinued, was like their apex level single receiver rig, but they dropped it, and they've introduced no version that has the improvements that the 7851 has. These are all academic points, by the way, because the 7851 is like $12,000. There is zero chance I'll ever get one of those. Over.
I'm going to buy a $12,000 radio for sure. That'd be kind of hard for me to do unless I was doing it for a profession or something else. But talking about that contest and all, I hear that a lot. No, is that where people are seeing how many people they can contact at one time? What is all that about?
But mostly it's about working as many stations as you can in a certain amount of time on different bands. And depending on where the stations are, they count for more or less points. So it's all about working a whole bunch of people really fast.
So get the least amount of information you can and then move on.
It depends. Certain contests require that you exchange certain information, so you have to, like, give, like, your number, or, like, when you start out, your first contact is contact number one, and as you go down the list, you keep adding to that number. So if you made 300 contacts, and, you know, like, yeah, your number is 300, my call is blah, 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 and your signal report is 59, and that's it. And they're trying to do it as quickly as possible. But to dominate something like that, you have to have a station that has a tremendously good audio signal, is very strong, and you have to have good ears as well, so you can work lots of faint people too. It's actually not that easy, and the bands go completely nuts when contests are on. It's actually kind of fun.
People talked about it here recently, and all, I guess it was a contest a week or two ago, and everybody was talking about how nuts it was.
So I like contests because mostly what I do is I look for what I call the low-hanging fruit. Contesters in, like, weird, exotic DX locations, I call them, they call me back, I work them, and then suddenly I've got, like, you know, some bizarre island in my logbook that I never would have worked otherwise.
Cool. Talking about logbooks, what kind of logbook do you use? Did you buy one, or is there free ones out there and all?
Book is just says journal on the front of it. I bought it at Barnes & Noble, and it's, I don't know, like 3/4 of an inch thick. It's a whole bunch of lined pages, and that's what I'm using for a logbook.
Using one online, you know, I see a lot of people sell stuff online that you can log by, you know, that way. But because I that's what I started doing, is logging people's call signs down at into a regular notebook. But also seeing the digital stuff, I didn't know if a lot of people use those or not.
It's a log of the world, and they use digital logging programs, and there's a bunch of digital ones. I'm totally not interested in doing digital logs. I do only QSL through, like, EHAM. I will do paper, but only if you, like, torture me. But mostly I do digital stuff. But as far as I'm concerned, the only log that matters is the one that I write down in my book, because I don't write down, like, questionable contacts. So I've worked a ton of countries and stuff on paper, but on EHAM, a whole bunch of those people that I worked don't do EHAM at all, so I've never got confirmation from them. People that are interested in, like, certificates from the ARRL and other organizations really get into using logging programs and then submitting their logs to Log of the World to get credit, you know, for different countries and stuff they worked. Again, it depends what you want to do. I've been a shortwave listener since I was a kid, and my criteria are actually pretty high. If I can't work somebody, I just say I couldn't work them. If it's in my log, it's good, and that's good enough for me.
Sure, that definitely makes sense to me.
What radio would you get if you could get anything?
Fly, dear. All right. I really don't. I've looked around, and I've talked to several people and all, and I really like to go. I'm trying to join the Greenwood Ham Club now. I think we meet next Tuesday to see if I get voted in, but I like to go play with people and all, because I like to actually see it and feel it and touch it and see how it works. So not sure what I would buy right now, I'll be honest with you.
When I joined the local club here, the members mostly were pretty standoffish, and nobody offered to invite me over to try their stuff, which actually didn't matter because I was a hardcore receiver geek anyway, and I could already receive anything I wanted. I just needed an HF rig desperately so I could transmit, and it took me a long time before I could afford one for sure. Like I said, I made extra class before I ever could afford an HF rig, so that was kind of sad.
Yeah, I've
I checked in the net several times and locally, and a lot of them just don't seem eager to really get out and talk to new guys. No, I've actually had more contacts and talked to a lot of great people more up this way than I have down towards Greenwood area.